All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio. It's a Monday morning, November 21st. Coming up this hour, John Calabrese from Dunn County will talk about the recent advisory referendum, asking people in that county what they think of the idea of a national nonprofit health insurance plan. And it's an interesting mixed bag of results for Dunn County that we're looking forward to telling you about coming up at the bottom of the hour. If you want to reach us, 715-388-7155. I don't think anybody's taken the bait yet. I pulled the pin on the grenade of, you know, cranberry sauce, the jellied stuff in the can, or the fresh stuff that's mashed up in a bowl. You can always weigh in on that, or other, shall we say, more weighty matters. Also by email, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Last hour, we got to talking about kids and grandkids and Thanksgiving and everything else that we didn't even get to sports. So we're going to take care of a few notes there. The Milwaukee Bucks host Portland tonight. That will come on the heels of a setback on Friday night when the shorthanded Philadelphia 76ers overcame a 13-point deficit to beat the Bucks on Friday, 110-102. Badger football, Graham Mertz scored on a 2-yard quarterback sneak with 35 seconds left to complete a Badger comeback from an 11-point deficit entering the fourth quarter, and the Badgers beat Nebraska Saturday 15-14. And that makes Wisconsin eligible for a bowl game for the 21st consecutive year. The Badgers are 6-5 overall, 4-4 in the Big Ten. They host the Minnesota Gophers on Saturday, looking to get back the Paul Bunyan Axe Trophy. We had no Packer game over the weekend, of course, because of the way they laid an egg on Thursday, and they are now off until next Sunday night when they play in Philadelphia. We talked on Friday about divisions 4-7 in high school football for the championships. The top three divisions we're going to play later on Friday. If you missed it, here are the scores. Division 3, Monroe is your state champion, beating West Salem 35-14. In Division 2, Kettle Moraine topped West Appear 27-10. And your Division 1 champ is Kimberly, defeating Mukwonago 34-30. Now, here's an interesting note on the Marquette women's basketball team. For the first time in its history, the Marquette women's basketball team took down a top three nationally ranked team, beating Texas on Saturday at the Atlantis Resort in the Bahamas. They then went on to yesterday's semifinal in that tournament to face Gonzaga and defeated them 70-66, bringing the Golden Eagles to 5-0 on the season, only the fourth time in program history that that's happened. And so the Marquette women will play UCLA this morning at 11 o'clock. It's on ESPN2 in the championship game of the Battle for Atlantis. So congrats to the Marquette women for getting that far along the line. And the Badger men's basketball team and the women's team are at different spots in the Caribbean for holiday tournaments coming up over the weekend. And Aaron, my World Cup update is going to be real short here. I didn't watch it. And I believe it started with Qatar versus England. In fact, I know it did because I have Google on my computer, where Ecuador defeated Qatar 2-0. And so far, the only game underway in the group stage is England versus Iran. No score in the 10th minute. The U.S. team begins action this afternoon at 1 o'clock, I believe that's Central Time, against Wales. So we have that to look forward to, Aaron. That's how deep I get. Do you have anything deeper that maybe you appreciate soccer more than I do?
Well, one of my roommates watches it a lot. He's a big Manchester City fan. But we haven't really been watching the World Cup, partially because he said there was something going on with the place, or the, what do you call it?
The host?
Yeah, I guess the host in Qatar was having some, I think he said slave labor or something. Don't quote me on
that. Yes. And that is part of the reason. Look, I'm not a huge soccer fan for starters. I will admit to that. But then you know, the process by which FIFA, the world governing body of soccer, which is just corrupt from head to toe. And the way that they were, you know, bribed and everything else to award World Cups to Russia and then Qatar, well, that in and of itself was absolutely criminal. And then you build all these stadiums in the desert where it's 140 degrees using immigrant labor under almost slave-like conditions. And yeah, I was even less inspired to want to have to watch it at that time of year. I'm not saying I won't dip in from time to time, but it doesn't have, you're right, it doesn't have the same appeal to me. Aaron, you mentioned your roommates and you know, the things that you watch and do so often. I'm starting to think we might need that for a panel discussion, just you and the roommates, you know, sharing your wisdom with us for a day.
You know, maybe we would, although I feel like if we did that, it would just be a bunch of quotes from Love Island, since that's what we've been watching lately. catching up on season 3 from 2017, and it's an experience.
I don't care if this day lasts longer than 24 hours. I will hear nothing more random than that. I did not see that coming at all. Love Island, really, why?
It's just, it's very fun watching it. Watching all these disasters of people just clash and have nothing to do but talk to each other for however long. It's like debatably ethical. I know I do have a problem with a lot of reality TV, but this one did get a lot better as the show went on. A lot of the contestants were like, hey, we're not doing this unless you have like aftercare for mental health and stuff. Because when you trapped on an island for that long, they go a little crazy.
Well, Maybe that's healthy, because God only knows, if we've learned nothing from reality shows, if you're not careful, you might get a congressman out of the thing. We'll be back with more right after this. This is Up North News Radio. Well, we know how Paul Ryan behaved under pressure. He eventually cut and ran because he could not handle working with or for or under Donald Trump. But of course, again, now that he's free, it's not going to stop him from barking about it. Again, the barking dog that only barks until you approach him. So Paul Ryan, the former Wisconsin congressman, the former Speaker of the House, the former Wonder Kid, allegedly on budget numbers, was interviewed by Jonathan Curl on ABC News. I'm not sure exactly why, but although, as Kristen Lyerly noted last hour, apparently he's hawking a book, maybe. But he was talking about being a never Trumper because Donald Trump is a loser. And Stephanie Rule from NBC notes, it's not because Trump incited an attack on the Capitol. It's not because he pushed dangerous conspiracy theories, not because of how he knowingly misrepresented the reality of COVID leading to hundreds of thousands of unnecessary deaths. But Paul Ryan says he's leaving Trump because he's a loser and Paul Ryan wants to win. Let's listen to part of it until I can't stand it anymore.
That's the point. He can get his people through the primaries, but they can't win general elections. So what it's really clear, I think the Republican voter is going to move on. That's why I don't think he ends up winning the nomination at the end of the day. I think we have a great stable of good, capable conservatives who are more than capable of winning this primary for presidency and winning the election. And I think Republican voters know that. So that's why I think our voters ultimately, who really want to win, are going to give us candidates who can win.
What will it mean?
There we go. It's about winning. We talked about that with Speaker Robin Voss in our last hour when he talked about winning the culture war as the reason why he, Voss, might allow for exceptions to the state's abortion ban from 1849. And Paul Ryan here with Trump. It's about winning. And it's one of those lines that continues to be proven true the more that you watch, that there is a political class in this country that does not want to govern. They want to rule. And there's an immense difference between the two. And there's an immense difference in the mindset of the voters there, unfortunately. And you don't need me to tell you that, you know, the reaction on social media to Paul Ryan was swift and certain, basically calling him out as then and forever being a coward. And again, being able to talk big when he's doing, you know, interviews, when he's making speeches and getting paid for them. But when the country needed him, when we needed Republicans to have a spine and stand up for impeachment either time, which were both so proven, when we needed Republicans to stand up when it was time to invoke the 25th Amendment because somebody proven to be unbalanced was inciting a mob into violence at the Capitol, when we've needed Republican politicians to stand up, they've turned and run, which is why Republican voters, our Republican neighbors, our Republican friends, understandably are a little frustrated right now. Now, I'm not talking about your neighbor down the street with the Trump flag. There's, you know, it's going to take a lot to win him or her back over. But a lot of your other Republican friends and neighbors are saying the same thing that I think a lot of people say, going, where are the moderates? Where are the people with a backbone? Where are the people who will engage in service rather than selfishness? And Paul Ryan sees that now. He sees that Republican voters are not real thrilled with the way that their party's gone. And so it's understandable that he wants to win. But when he says it that way, that it's all about winning, it again only reminds us that this is a group of people, Republican politicians, who can't win on ideas. And so they try to win elections through any means possible. This time around, it was inflation and crime. Prior to that, it was migrant caravans. Prior to that, it was vilifying our LGBTQ friends and neighbors. And that talk is still going on, of course. And we saw the result of that over the weekend with another mass shooting at an LGBTQ nightclub with at least 5 people dead there. That didn't happen in a vacuum. That happened because cowards like Paul Ryan and others would not stand up to this kind of anti-gay, anti-trans, just hateful about any given group rhetoric. It didn't help that the shooter in Colorado Springs apparently is the grandson of a right-wing state legislator who praised the January 6th insurrection and compared it to the beginning of the Revolutionary War. Again, the violence, or the if not being violent yourself, then not standing up to it, that kind of mindset is what leads to violence. And it's what leads to, as you can hear, somewhat of a visceral reaction when you hear from people like Paul Ryan, who had every opportunity to stand up and did not. Until it was time to hawk a book or something like that. And now we see it on Twitter with Elon Musk spending tens of billions of dollars simply to, well, first off, as a plaything, because that's what multi-billionaires can do, and to watch the enjoyment of people's anger, to enjoy the anger of people that he has decided to put Donald Trump back on Twitter, and that he is allowing other people and groups that were kicked off Twitter for violent rhetoric and for hate speech is allowing them back on the platform. So finally, last night, I'd read a little bit about this potential alternative to Twitter called Mastodon. There are a couple that are being put out there. One's called Mastodon, one's called Post. People saying a lot of good things about Post, but they're building theirs up very slowly, and you have to get on a wait list before you can get an account. And if I remember right, when I put myself on the wait list, it said you're number 186,000, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, wow, I'm going to get Packer season tickets, you know, before I get on this thing. But maybe I'm wrong. If I can advance on Post, I will let you know. But for now, I looked at what other people had written about getting on Mastodon. At first, it sounded a little intimidating. But, you know, as I continued to read more about it, I thought, okay, this will work. And it isn't that tough. Here's what you need to know about it. Twitter, like Facebook, is a single site controlled basically by one person, Elon Musk on Twitter, Mark Zuckerberg over on Facebook. That works in some ways until it doesn't, until, you know, the person in charge says, let's monkey with the algorithms. How many times have you said about Twitter and or Facebook, could we just go back to how it was when it was in chronological order of all of my friends, so I can easily scroll through and see what they did or said? But then, of course, they had to monkey with it to push things toward us, which, as we've learned, frequently involves anything that leads to, you know, anger, comments, any kind of negative engagement gets boosted first, you know, in Facebook. Why can't we just have something clean? Well, one of the pros about Mastodon is that it does get back to that, just being this clean, reverse chronological scroll of people. It's a little bit more complex than that, but if I tell you that that's a nugget of it, that should be a selling point in and of itself. But Mastodon is not a single program. It's not a single website. It is how they describe a whole series of different sites. And actually, we'll call them servers because that's what they are, you know, computers that can serve, you know, many, many, many people. And instead of one server, you know, serving every Twitter user, there's all these different ones. And you pick one of them through the signup process. And again, it sounds intimidating, but it's not really. You pick one and say, okay, I want to be a member of that particular server. And some servers are catered toward different interests, like maybe journalists or people who follow politics or certain crafts or hobbies or sports or what have you. And you're not stuck with it. That was the thing that finally got to me. It's like, oh, okay, so you can actually switch servers if you like. And what happens is you can then, through one feed, which looks a lot like Twitter, you see what everybody on that server is saying. But on a different feed, it's just the people you are following. You see what they're posting. And if you choose to follow somebody, let's say I want to follow Aaron, and Aaron signed up on a different server, that's okay. Because as long as I say I want to follow him, he'll show up in my feed as well. So the whole notion is that it's decentralized, and the administrator of each server sets their own rules. Maybe on some servers, they'll allow a little, you know, adult content or swear words or, you know, even, you know, some right-wing chatter. And at other servers, the administrator might be like, nope, we're keeping this thing, you know, PG or what have you. And again, if you don't like it, you can move to another server, but at least then, if you find one that feels like a home, then that's where you are. So that's how I got started signing up for it last night, and then I'll let you know how it goes. Aaron, have you made any kind of changes in your social media yet?
Not yet, but that description of it, I might have to go make an account today, because I never really got into Twitter, and I was going to because, you know, a lot of industries and individuals just use it to announce a lot of things. But obviously, given recent events, I'm less inclined to start using it more. But I do use Reddit a decent amount. And this sounds a lot like Reddit, but merged with Twitter.
It is. It is kind of a hybrid of it. Yeah, that's a very good explanation of it. So it's one that's definitely worth checking out. And by the way, I'm staying on Twitter. Simply, you know, because you got to monitor stuff like this. You can't cede ground in the war against misinformation. And so I plan to be there putting up with the garbage and the glitches and whatnot. Maybe it crashes and burns at some point. I don't know, but I'll still be there as well. But I again, wanted to see what Mastodon was like, and I'll start posting on there as well. By the way, the server that I chose is one called Universodon. So it's like Mastodon, but universe and then O-D-O-N. There's another one that's just for, you know, journalism and things like that. But I chose that one. Kirk Bangstad over at Minocqua Brewing chose that one. And it turns out a lot of the people that I follow on Twitter went to that one called Universodon. So just background there. All right, let's turn our attention to our next segment. It's a taped interview, taped with John Calabrese in Dunn County. And it was taped about 10 days ago. So my apologies in advance for any dated references. But I really wanted to get do a follow-up. We had him on before the election to talk about an advisory referendum that he and members of the group Our Wisconsin Revolution helped promote. And then the Dunn County Board, which is, again, a conservative county and votes, you know, consistently Republican. And yet the county board voted unanimously to put this question on the ballot because as county board members, they know how screwed up the current health insurance system is in this country. And so they asked voters, what do you think of the concept of a national nonprofit health insurance plan? And John Calabrese is going to talk about the results and the, you know, the different ways you could look at what the voters had to say. I'll have a little bit more to say next right after this break. You're up north.
Under pressure. Pressure.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
All right, as noted, let's talk to John Calabrese. We talked to him about 10 days ago, and I started by asking him about that non-binding advisory referendum on what Dunn County voters thought of a national nonprofit health insurance plan. And I just started by asking him how to turn out.
Well, our referendum passed with nearly 51.5% of the vote. I told a reporter last week who I was interviewing with when we were walking around that when I was walking around that nothing would surprise me. I wouldn't have been surprised if it got 40%. I wouldn't have been surprised if it got 60%. It was hard to gauge, and you know, we were hoping for better numbers, but it passed, and that's really significant to me. And especially given that the rest of the county Republicans won every race, we outperformed Governor Evers. He had 45%. We got 51. So by 6 points, we outperformed Senate Mandela Barnes by 8 points. And so what that says to me is that this is not a partisan issue. It is a human issue. And if you look at the breakdown of numbers for the little villages around Dunn County that we got to, that we went and dropped our literature at, we got to every little village in the county. And so places like Ridgeland and Wheeler and Boyceville and Elk Mound, places that, you know, you can look, each village and township has their own results. And we won in every one of those where we spent time dropping off our flyers that we have. And, you know, we didn't do a lot of door knocking. We just left literature there for people. We did see a lot of people who were out and about. There's nice weather. And, you know, my general sense of it, what's so rewarding, aside from the fact that it passed, was getting out to the people and seeing how they're doing and offering an ear to listen to them, talking about health insurance, talking about healthcare. And I just heard so many stories and, you know, people are hurting out there. And I think that if we had more time, if we had more people to get this and some more conversations out to the outlying townships that are hard to get to, you know, the rural areas with those long roads and long driveways, I feel like we could have had better numbers, but overall really excited that it passed.
You know, my guess is as good as anybody else's. And I wonder if by outperforming Democratic candidates, while at the same time still being, you know, roughly 50-50 cumulative, what you have there, my observation would be folks who lean or always vote Republican, but who have had some kind of first degree exposure to how messed up the current system is. And frankly, if more people had poor experiences with the system that we have right now, that number would only continue to grow. It's just that, unfortunately, from a political standpoint, people come down on the side of, you know, less government, free market and everything until it actually happens to them. That's one thesis. Do you have either some agreement with that or some other perspective on the chunk of people who typically vote Republican but voted for the referendum?
Yes, I do think that's part of it. We spent a lot of time in trailer parks, everyone that we could find, not just because it's a good use of time, you can get to people a lot quicker, but because that's many places, many instances, that's where a lot of the pain is. And I think that, you know, I don't know anybody who doesn't have some bad experience with this system. And so I think that was definitely part of it. And definitely, you know, it was me and a few other people came up sporadically throughout the weeks. And just to have people come to your door and leave something or talk to you and show that they care. And then people who actually read through this and talked about it with us, the fact that the county board was integral in getting this question to them and that they voted unanimously for it. And I spoke with several conservative people who, you know, they didn't need to identify as it. I could see the signs in their yard, and I tell them I'm on the county board, and people would light up. And I know that the county board doesn't have time or finances to go, you know, canvassing and door knocking and things like that. But for people to see that their county is thinking about them, for people to start to understand how much money counties pay, you know, of their tax dollars for health insurance. Like, I think there are a myriad of things that are starting to shift people. And then there's the small business owners. I talked to a neighbor of mine who works for, it's not even a small business, it's one of the largest employers in Menominee. And he was having a meeting with the president of this branch of this corporation, a very conservative guy. And he said, you know, I'm going to vote yes on that referendum. Because if it's done right, then it makes all the sense in the world, that why should businesses have to provide health insurance for their employees? Think of, what we could do with that extra revenue, what it would do to the whole country. And so I think it's shifting in general, and it's slow. It's hard to see when we're living in it, but I think the entire issue is starting to shift across the country.
So moving forward for other counties, again, because it came out closely divided in the end, does that hinder any effort to try to talk to other counties about doing the same thing? Or do you consider it a good exercise that other county boards ought to be considering and engaging public opinion where they are?
I think if it had greater numbers, if it was 60-65%, it would be a much bigger story and much more shocking to people. But when you look at the results and you see, you know, that every other race went Republican and that the board voted unanimously, and then I think it's still something that we can present in a positive way to other county boards, especially given the fact that it doesn't take much time of the much of the county's time, doesn't take much, if any, of the county's dollars. And I think that if you remind people, because county boards are here and now, what can we do with the resources we have? We have to get things done. But if you remind them that they are the closest unit of government to the people, and fill them with that, the pride of that knowledge, and say, you know, movements for change start really small and you can barely see them, and you can play your part thinking about your own health insurance stories, or your parents, or your kids, or your grandkids, in starting this thing to let everybody know that health insurance is a human issue. It's not a partisan issue. And so I think it's the fact that it passed is very important, and we still can use that to help spread it to other counties.
I've had the focus on county boards, but let's turn it to the group Our Wisconsin Revolution. And I'm not asking you to speak for the entire group necessarily, but as somebody active with it, and where this idea kind of originated, would you expect that that group, its members, its chapters, will take the initiative in other counties as well? Or was this a unique, almost one and done exercise?
No, the plan is for the organization to move forward. And we have another meeting of our Wisconsin Revolution Healthcare Committee on Sunday. And we're going to discuss the results and discuss what the plan is going forward. We have about three potential counties that we might work on for the spring election. And I think the organization needs to decide how much time and effort they want to put into it. And we're discussing that on the staff as well, because you know, to keep an organization like this going, you need some funding. And I think we've already, I heard this morning from Kay Tillo down in Kentucky. Again, we did some radio programs with her in the lead up, and she's hosting another national Zoom call with all sorts of single payer advocates across the country. And I've been getting lots of calls and doing many interviews. And so I think as an organization, it would be wonderful for us to pursue this, to get people to support our work and, you know, set ourselves apart from so many of the other organizations who just simply work in, even though that's good work too, inside the political process and for candidates and elections and things like that. I think this is an opportunity for us to grow in a nonpartisan, issue-based way.
You've told us that the resolution, or the referendum rather, was worded in such a way to try to avoid endorsing any single approach to this. But I wonder if the results of it, with clearly some Republican constituents supporting this, do you think it might inform any change in direction by legislative Republicans in Wisconsin, because we're still one of the very few states that hasn't taken the Medicaid expansion and improved on Badger care? Might this provide a little leverage for legislative Republicans to hang their hat on and say, okay, we haven't done this for years, but maybe that is this push that they need to finally accept the expanded Medicaid funds?
Well, that's what we're hoping. And I think that one county probably won't make it enough leverage, but, you know, county after county, when they see that, red counties that voted for Trump are feeling this way, they might, even if it's a self-serving political thing, they might say, you know what, these county boards, because what I do know is that, that the county boards that are, even in these rural counties, have, religiously, year after year, approached Republican lawmakers and said, please take the Medicaid expansion because our nursing home needs that reimbursement rate. And, you know, many of the people on the county boards are Republicans. And so they know it. They know that it's there. And we're hoping that with, you know, enough counties and enough pressure from the people combined with the boards, that it would provide that leverage. And they would say, you know, Obama is long gone. This is still here for our citizens, and we're gonna do this for you. It's just a there's a real hesitation to ever admit a mistake or go back on something that you said before in state politics, and so it's gonna be tough. But we're hoping that we can do it.
Well, you certainly tried to do it by taking the partisanship out of it. So, final question is what are your final feelings about the approach that you took, and how you feel, not so much about the result, but about the experience overall, to the pitching it to the county board, getting it on the ballot, the conversations at the doors? What's your general impression of the worthiness of the project overall?
You know, I feel really good about it. When the results were coming in, I was getting nervous because we were waiting for the largest municipality to weigh in Menominee to see that if it passed. And so I spent a lot of the time on Wednesday, you know, thinking about what we could have done better and sort of wishing that the numbers were greater. But in the interim, in these last 2 days, and I've been thinking of it as an overall project and how wonderful it was for me for these last 6-8 weeks to go out as much as I could to all these little townships that a few I've never even been to before. And when I compare my experience in this campaign, in bringing it to the board and bringing it to the people, with what you hear on the news, with what you hear from the people in Washington, D.C., and their mouthpieces in the media, and that I hear too much, and it makes me cringe a little bit when I hear sentiments like, well, half the country's too far gone. Well, half the country's stupid. Well, half the country, because that's not the case. And I went out there, and even aside from the health insurance issue, my overall feeling is that this approach could actually be the key to healing that division, because I didn't see stupidity. I didn't see people who want to overthrow democracy. I didn't see it. I saw regular Americans trying to make ends meet and who are happy to see someone come up their driveway and listen to a story that they might have. And so overall, I think it's a wonderful project for the health insurance issue, but I also think it's a wonderful project for people to get involved in, just to, you know, help help unite with your neighbors, help people remember that we're all in this together and that these are our communities, these are our neighbors, they're not our enemies. And so it's a really good feeling.
John, thank you so much. We appreciate all the information on it and wish you all the best going forward.
Thank you, Pat. Glad to be here.
And again, our thanks to John Calabrese for talking to us a few days ago about that advisory referendum in Dunn County. And again, working hard to make it a human issue and to find people where they are experiencing pain because of this current system and talking about what hopefully would be a better alternative eventually in this country. We'll wrap up today's visit after this here up north. I'm a lifelong Midwesterner, but even I'm having trouble wrapping my head around 6 feet of snow falling at once. One of the first things I saw upon opening up my interwebs browser this morning was a time-lapse loop of the lake effect snow coming off Lake Erie and just pummeling Buffalo and other parts on the eastern shore of Lake Erie with lake effect snow up to 6 feet of it falling. Now, I've certainly lived through my share of blizzards in the day. There's the Halloween blizzard of 1991 that ended with 3 feet of snow when it was all said and done, you know, 33 to 36 inches in one fell swoop. But 72 is another matter. It's one heck of a way to start your morning in November when the first day of winter is still a month away. I want to tell you about a couple of things that you can find over at UpNorthNewsWI.com, our website, including this one from Christina Lori with the headline, "The Power of an Hour, six places to spend 60 minutes on Thanksgiving or Christmas Day, or frankly, anytime this time of year when they might appreciate you." She notes number one would be nursing homes. Of the 21,000 people living in Wisconsin nursing homes, 60% never receive a personal visitor. For many, the holidays are merely one long reminder of the people and places that are no longer in their lives. So whether you play a game of cards or just sit and talk, your holiday visit will create a positive memory for the both of you. Number two is animal shelters. More animals are abandoned during the month of December than any other time of year. By January, some 6 million pets that were once presents just a couple of weeks earlier will fill U.S. shelters, which are already overwhelmed by COVID-fueled abandonments. Many shelters create special volunteer shifts on the holidays to give their paid staff members time with their families, and all you are being asked to do in return is play with some puppies. Kind of a win-win. Number three, women's shelters. Reports of domestic violence spike during the holidays as victims spend more time trapped indoors with abusive partners. Wisconsin has 83 organizations committed to helping these women in 60 cities across the state by serving meals, collecting and distributing donations, or simply swinging by to drop off a holiday donation of your own, such as toiletries, clothes, and toys. You will make an immediate impact. Number four is local hospitals. For the first holiday season since 2019, many hospitals are open to visitors and volunteers. You will still have to wear a mask, as well you should. You can help cheer up those who can't go home for the holidays by keeping them company while they eat, watch TV, or again, just play a quick bedside game with them. Many hospitals are looking for volunteers to greet and direct visitors as well. Number five would be soup kitchens, one of the most popular places to volunteer at Thanksgiving or Christmas. Some still need an extra set of hands to serve meals or pack up some to-go portions and sort donations. Now, just be sure you call ahead to make sure that you're not a nuisance. If all the holiday spots are full, then consider signing up for a shift in January when the need remains high and the volunteer numbers fall off significantly. And then finally, number six, a cause that you care about. The United Way of Wisconsin works year-round to connect people in need with places that help. The nonprofit runs a database filled with hundreds of volunteer openings in all 72 counties. You can filter your search by distance, by interest, age, impact, and about a dozen other criteria. And you can go to this article for links for ways to sign up for a holiday opportunity near you. And for that, again, it's right there on the homepage of our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Aaron, there's one other article on there, and this one is going to be a little bit more interactive, so I'm going to need your help with this. There are some strange town names in Wisconsin, and so you are invited to take this quiz. Real name of a Wisconsin town or fake name of a Wisconsin town? And again, with the emphasis on townships, most people know cities and villages, but towns themselves can have some unusual names that people, you know, might not know. So let's start first. Again, real or fake, Aaron, Avalanche, Wisconsin.
I'm going to have to go with real.
Okay, let's say real. Avalanche is a real community in Vernon County. Good job. I should have got a bell or a buzzer for you. Sorry, I didn't give you. Gotham, Wisconsin, real or fake? Gotham.
Gotham. I know that there's Gotham in other states, but I don't know if there is here. I'm going to say real.
It is real. It's in Richland County, population 197. I've driven through it and I've wanted to take a picture of the sign just to say how the place is not nearly as popular as it was when Batman ruled the roost, but so it goes. Utah, Wisconsin, spelled E-U-T-A-W. Real or fake?
Because of the spelling, I'm going to say real.
And it is fake. Unlike Arkansas, there is no Utah in Wisconsin. That would be in Alabama. Footville, Wisconsin, real or fake?
Footville. Is it spelled exactly like it sounds?
Yep, Footville.
I want it to be fake, so I'm going to say fake.
Fake. No, it's real. Footville, population 808, is in Rock County. There's a chance they might have a good soccer team there. Oyster Falls, Wisconsin. Real or fake? Oyster Falls.
Real?
Real? No, it's fake. There's no Oyster Falls. There is a Clam Falls in Polk County, population 547. Okay, here's a gimme. This should have been like question number one. Oconomowoc.
Yeah, that's obviously real.
It's real. We always have to check our spelling, but yeah, it's very real. Oh, we had Gotham. How about Metropolis? Metropolis, Wisconsin, real or fake?
I'm going to say fake.
Fake. You got that one right. Good job. We may have Batman's Gotham, but no Metropolis for Superman in the Badger State. Couple more here. Willows, Wisconsin, real or fake? Willows.
Real?
Let's see here. No, fake. Sorry. If Willows, Wisconsin sounds familiar, that's because it's the fictional town where Barbie of Barbie doll fame grew up. So let's see. Yeah, exactly. Let's see. I don't think did I keep track? Let's see. Got to total these up, carry the two. You got 5 out of 8. So, you know, above 500.
That's kind of, that is a passing grade, maybe.
Yeah. But what it says here is you might not know how to spell Wyawega, but you probably know how to get there. And that Up North News is the place to go for more continuing coverage of the Badger State, no matter where you are. So, all right, here's a reminder. You can follow some of our news stories or features and much more over at our website, upnorthnewswi.com. You can sign up for our daily newsletter by clicking on newsletter in the top banner there and follow us on social media, UpNorthNewsWI. Don't forget the WI. And you can follow me on Facebook. Look for Pat Kreitlow Up North or Pat Kreitlow on Twitter. All right, go have fun, work hard, play hard, enjoy the day, and we'll see you Tuesday.